Okay, Greg, how long have you and I known each other?
Oh, that's a great question. Would I say it would be roughly like, what, 6 or 7 years? 5 years?
Yeah.
Seven?
We met when I was doing Hockey Night Radio, right? On Sirius?
Yeah.
That's probably the first time we met. Anyone who's known me previous to that, whether it was working on AM 640 or the Fan 590 or, you know, wherever I worked, Virtually Canadian, all the places that I've worked before, know I've been fascinated by one thing in hockey my entire life. I've brought it up on the podcast countless times. The what-if scenario of the house goaltender. You know, I yearn for the years of, you know, Lester Patrick coming down from the stands and stopping shots. You know, I yearn for the Len Broderick coming out of the stands for that one game, and now he's on all the Montreal-Toronto cards from the 1955 Parkhurst set. It's a really odd sort of quirk in hockey card lore. I've been in love with the Lefty Wilson, right? The Detroit trainer who once suited up for the Boston Bruins, had to face his team, the Detroit Red Wings. Gordie Howe whistled the first shot at his head, and I think Ted Lindsay did the same. I've been in love with the idea of the house goaltender, and I've always asked the question, well, what if both goaltenders get injured? It could. You and I had the discussion, was it last year or 2 years ago? What would they do if two goaltenders got injured? And it's a scenario where you think, it'll never happen. Let's, you know, don't even spend too much time thinking about it. So yesterday in the Panthers-Leafs game, as we all know and all followed along, we had a scenario where both goaltenders were injured. Uh-huh. You would think, Greg, this would send me into an orgasmic society of hockey, international hockey research frenzy. Like, this would be it for me. This would, you know, barely enough loose skin to blink. Extend every sort of bit of euphoria that Jeff Merrick can have in his tiny little 170-pound body at 5'11", because, oh my God, the thing that Merrick has wanted to see his entire life is about to happen. You'd have thought I'd be pretty excited last night, right, Wish?
Yeah, why weren't you?
We had a power failure.
Oh, no.
Here in Stouffville. I didn't watch a single second of hockey yesterday. I missed everything. I had to follow along the Florida drama with everybody else on Twitter. Game Center Live is down. I got no internet. I can't watch television. Cable's down. We have a power failure. So I'm following along on Twitter on my iPhone, and I'm sobbing. I'm like, oh my God, Talon's in the hallway. They're talking. All of a sudden, Luongo shows up. He's in his civvies. All of a sudden, you know, Rob Talas is on the bench. McKenzie's going to the back. Is Upshaw going to go in? It's every bit of hockey geekdom that I've ever wanted to geek out about. And I was totally shut out from it because we had a blackout yesterday from 7:30 till about midnight. I missed all of it, Greg. Single second of it.
I
waited my whole life. My whole life. And the one day that it happens, we get a power failure. Fuck me. The one day that it happens, we have a power failure. Oh my God.
That is my life, buddy. That's my life.
Walter, there's a UFO.
Right after I tie my shoe, Scully.
Can you believe it? Of all the damn luck. So there it is. Damn it. But you know what? Okay, so it led to a pretty interesting discussion. And this is why I love the Society for International Hockey Research. Bob Duff is a good friend of mine. He writes for the Windsor Star. He's written a number of hockey books. The Johnny Bower book may be the best one that he's written, China Wall. Wonderful guy, great historian. So he gets into it with Liam McGuire, who's also another historian slash trivia expert, over who was the last non-goaltender to play goal in the NHL. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And common folklore has it. I want to ask you if you consider this to be a real goaltender. This is going back. Hang on, just bear with me.
I love when you say things like common folklore has it, as if you know there's a native Canadian shaman who's sitting around a fire with some children, being like, "Oh, the great goaltender. We all remember his name."
Okay, so Jerry Tappazzini, I know that just rolls off your tongue because he holds a record for the most shorthanded goals in a season with 7. Mm-hmm. At least he did. Maybe he does. Maybe Jordan Staal has that now. I'm not sure. Anyway, so Jerry Tappazzini is playing with the Boston Bruins. It's 30 seconds left in a game against the Chicago Blackhawks, 1960. And this is the era of the house goaltender. But it's a 5-2 game. The outcome is not in doubt. Tappazzini says, screw it, we can't wait for the house goaltender to get in, I'll just go in net, and he skates in net. It's the final 30 seconds of the game. He doesn't face a shot. Is he the goaltender? Or is he just a skater who went into the net?
He's the goaltender.
Why?
Wait, hold on. So he doesn't face a shot, but
He doesn't put on pads. He doesn't put on gloves. Doesn't have a goalie stick. He just chooses to wear his normal hockey equipment. He's part of the game. to go and stand in net for the final 30 seconds? Is he a goaltender or is he just a player? The question you have to ask yourself, if he faced a shot, would it be a blocked shot or a save? I would say blocked
shot. I think
shot.
By definition.
I would say blocked shot.
By definition, I think you have to wear the goalie gear to be the goalie. Otherwise, you are merely a skater protecting the goal. No, that's
right. What I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So that was Liam's point, was that Jerry Toppazzini was the last guy. Now, Duff came in with, I thought, was the stronger argument, which is Andy Brannigan, who's a defenseman with the New York Americans. This is 1941, takes over from Charlie Rayner, and for 7 minutes wore the pads and faced shots. That, to me, should be the last non-goaltender to play goal in the NHL. It shouldn't be Jerry Toppazzini. The saves that Brannigan made, I would say, were saves. If Jerry Toppazzini would have made a save, I would have just called it a block shot. Mm-hmm. He was a skater who happened to stand in net. Like Roger Nilsson, okay, when he coached the Peterborough Petes in the early 70s, he used to do a little trick with a defenseman by the name of Ron Stackhouse. All you Pittsburgh Penguins fans will know that name. He was a defenseman for the Pens for a lot of years. So they don't allow this anymore. It's one of the Roger Nilsson's rules. On a penalty shot, what Roger was do is pull the goaltender out, and sometimes that goaltender was Greg Millen, pull him out and put Ron Stackhouse in net. The player would pick up the puck at center, Stackhouse would charge out at the blue line, challenge the guy, touch the puck, and the shot was over. So, last night led to so much delight online watching Bob Duff and Liam McGuire go back and forth on this one, because everyone's always assumed it's Toppazzini, and then my boy Duff comes in with the right bower and says, hold on a second here, that would have been a block shot, that wouldn't have been a save. It led for a fascinating discussion, but it still doesn't mitigate the fact that something I've wanted to see my entire life, I literally got blacked out of. Thanks, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, I mean, it's no different to me than someone defending the goal during an odd man situation.
Precisely.
You know, a pole goalie situation. Yeah,
or if a goalie gets pulled out to the side and someone slides in to make, the defenseman slides in to make a save and it goes off his shin pads, is that a save or is a block shot? I say it's a block shot. I say whatever Toppazzini would have done then, if anyone would have shot a puck at him, would have been a block shot, not a save. I'm with you. I say you got to wear pads. You got to have the equipment on TV. Otherwise, here's another one. So then let's say, and again, this is all ifs and buts, candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. Let's say Toppazzini does face a shot and then joins the rush and crosses center. Automatically disqualifies him from being a goaltender, right? But he would have been able to, because he doesn't have the pads on. He doesn't have the tools of ignorance on. Doesn't have the waffle. Doesn't have the catcher. Doesn't have the pads. Doesn't have the chest protector. He's a player who chose to stand in front of the net.
What would Jerry Toppazzini have done? The same thing all of us would have done when faced by adversity. Put that on a bracelet.
Kings of Hockeywood says, couldn't you have watched Game Center on your iPhone? I don't have it loaded on my iPhone. I just have it on my iPad.
Please. Dummy and me. By the way, in Stouffville, they're still on iPhone 2. So come on.
The 6 plus, yo. Thing barely fits in my pocket.
I really, again, we've seen emergency goalie situations before, and they're always fascinating, and much more fascinating, I think, when it's not a guy with NHL experience on the bench, but someone like Brett Leonhard, for example, from the Capitals on the bench. But, the most amazing thing last night wasn't necessarily the fact that Tallis almost got in. The most amazing thing last night was that Luongo got back in.
From the hospital.
I have never seen, ever, in all my time watching hockey, a guy go into street clothes, leave the arena for the hospital, come back to the arena, have a discussion in the tunnel in street clothes, and then come back into the game.
No, because in Strange Brew, Rosie LaRose did that when he went to the mental institution and then came back to fight the bad stormtroopers in Strange Brew.
You stormtroopers are no match for my Jedi powers, eh?
Hey, Rosie, I got your rookie card. Sorry, congratulations to get that hat trick against Czechoslovakia. Sorry for the nervous breakdown.
But seriously, though, like that is, to me, the most amazing part of this whole thing. Was not only did you have the empty husk of Al Montoya valiantly trying to keep them in that game, but
only
then,
saw it on highlights. And I'm following this, and I'm thinking, is this guy like standing there doing statue practice in net? Is he doing elevator practice in there? Like, the poor guy can't move.
Can't move. It was terrible. But then you get Luongo back in the game. I mean, people make this joke every single night, but it really was, by God, that's Roberto Luongo's music.
I love it. I freaking love it. Oh, it's so amazing. It's so fantastic.
Yeah, it was a
drag for the Florida Panthers. If they miss the playoffs by a point, I will have a big sad, knowing how I'm all in on Team Cat this year. Say nothing of the Bukestad injury. Ugh. Come on, Team Cat. You can do
George
this,
George Richards
Cat.
Will join us in due time to talk about last night's amazingness. And also there was a debate this morning by some of our friends on the Twitters about the Calder Trophy, which I found kind of interesting, and Aaron Ekblad versus Philip Forsberg. So we'll have that to cover as well. But, yeah, I mean, it sucks for the Cats. It's the kind of thing that you have to deal with during the season, although you never think it's going to strike you like that. But the larger implication here for Florida, obviously, is next steps. I mean, we know Montoya is out long term, it seems like. Luongo getting checked today, checking on that prognosis, getting more imaging done, according to Bob McKenzie, on his shoulder injury. Dan Ellis and Sam Britton have been recalled by Florida. Dan Ellis is the starter for the next game for the Panthers, and we don't know for how long that'll be, depending on what Luongo's injury is going to be. But Dan Ellis, ladies and gentlemen.
See if you can make a trade.
Well, then you got that, too. You do have that ability to make a trade. The player that you require is not playoff eligible.
Yeah.
Kind
of an insult to Dan Ellis.
Maybe Chad Johnson.
Let's see. If any goaltender dares to win a game for the Buffalo Sabres, Tim Murray right away sends that player to Florida.
Let's get some straight here. UFA goalie?
You're not here to win games.
UFA goalie on a team that's going nowhere. Nothing jumps off the page at me.
Let's have a look here. What do we have? Oh, right. you're not gonna get Kari Rama. Okay.
Can you get Craig Anderson? Is he UFA or is he long term? I forget.
Doesn't Craig Anderson have one more year?
He might have.
I think he has one more year.
I don't know. Let's just hope. Let's just hope that Luongo's okay. I mean, we don't have to go down this road. Dan Ellis.
I'll tell you what. If you're Dave Notice right now, you're talking to Dale Talon about a significant Florida Panthers pick in James Reimer.
Yeah, significant. Like a first.
You want to make the playoffs or not? How many points are you back from the Bruins? Oh, look at that, 2.
Yeah, well, as if that pick is going to want to play in Toronto, the way things are going.
It'll be a new team, don't worry.
We should touch on that before George comes on.
So,
when we last left you, we were talking about Lupul and the tweet and the FNUFs in the tweet. And then after we went off the air, this lawsuit comes down, or this the threat of lawsuit, we should say, between Lupul, Dion FNUF, and Elijah Cuthbert, threatening a lawsuit against TSN if they don't get a full apology and financial compensation, and also threatening the tweeter with a lawsuit if they don't get, I guess, an apology and financial compensation, although I don't really know what the hell they'd be looking for from him. And then TSN apologized last night on the air. James Duffy came on, and they showed it twice, and they apologized. And I know Lupul is still threatening to fight people on Instagram, but I don't know. Do you think that suffices? Do you think the giant mea culpa from TSN suffices? Do you think they'll continue to pursue legal action against the guy who wrote the joke?
I didn't like the fact that it was James that had to do it.
Well, it was James that was hosting at the time they published it.
Well, that's fine. Did he publish that tweet?
No.
Why does he have to go out and make the apology?
Because he's the captain. That's what the captain does.
Really?
Right, though?
There are leaders above
James. Are you trying to say that some intern should be put in front of the camera?
No.
And shown to the world for being the person who published the tweet?
No, I'm saying people above James should have. Don't you feel that would have been the right thing?
Yeah.
I'm not saying, oh, you bring out some intern. Yeah, sorry, I screwed up. We'll try not to do it again. No.
That's a very
why
good point.
James?
Where was
why James?
Where was the president of the company, Alexander Graham Bell? Where is he? why did he come before the camera to apologize to Lupul and Dion and Elijah?
I just put myself in James's situation, and he's such a thorough professional. Of course, he's going to do it. I get that, but I couldn't help thinking in the back of my mind that somewhere Duffy is thinking, I didn't do this. And I'm out here, and I'm attaching myself to it by apologizing. I had nothing to do with this. I was tracking trades and chasing llamas. Why am I doing the apology?
I find it to be fascinating. Look, as a person who lives on the internet, I see every single day that joke or some facsimile of that joke. Yeah. And, you know, we all kind of laughed at the Brian Burke lawsuit when he filed it against Poonerman for inferring that he had an affair and a child at a wedlock. And that's a pretty serious accusation. And this is a pretty serious accusation. And it starts to make you wonder, you know, like, all this stuff kind of passes into the ether. But at any point, someone could point to the thing that you've written, even if you think it's a complete nonsensical satirical thing that has no basis in reality and blah, 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 and say, enough's enough. Yeah. This is it. This is the one I'm picking. I'm going to go to that law firm in Vancouver that seems to specialize in tracking down and prosecuting tweeters, because Burke and Lupul and Phaneuf and Cuthbert all use the same law firm, and we're going to go after you. And it's an interesting thing. I mean, the short-term effect of this legal action or threat of it, beyond the apology, is that there will be no publishing of tweets on a Trade Deadline show next year at all.
Yeah.
If they're not from people with a big blue check mark next to their name and a photo of them playing in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. No more of that. And we're better off for it. And we're better off for it. But at the same time, too, it does raise some questions about what is a conversation and what is publishing. Because I'll tell you, you go to any bar in downtown Toronto, and people are having that conversation.
Yeah, but it's... Again, we talked about this before. You're not broadcasting it, you're not publishing it. It's the venue thing.
I totally agree. I'm agreeing with you. I mean, I'm sure the tweeter's defense would be like, oh, I just set up a tweet. I wasn't, you know, broadcasting that to the world. Well, it's like if you made a sign and someone
that's where it gets dicey. But that's where it gets dicey in this situation, though, because first of all, Twitter's a public square. It just is. Unless you have your account locked, it's a public square. And I've seen people complain before about, like, for example, like Deadspin publishing tweets from people that are like on a public account available to be found through any search, not locked. And if it's a news story and those tweets are relevant to the news story, yeah, they're fair game. But there's a lot of people who don't understand journalism who bitch and moan about that. The other aspect of it, though, is this. This guy's not simply just screaming it in the public square. He's screaming it at TSN, at the hashtag they set up so they could collect tweets and then publish them. So you can't go into this thinking, oh, all right, well, I'll just say this shit and no one's going to notice, when you decide to put this into their feed of stuff that might make the air. So, I think it's their complete irresponsibility for publishing it, and I really feel bad that Elijah Cuthbert has to be dragged into this nonsense for the second time in her life because of some dumbass in hockey. But, you know, at the same I get the outrage about the guy who wrote the tweet. I really think, though, this is definitely on the network for publishing it. I mean, it's just completely irresponsible to do it.
I always look at intention. I don't think it was. I don't think anyone believes that it was. So I cut people in that situation a lot of slack. I don't know how it happened. I don't know what was in place. I don't know how they were drawing the tweets. I don't know how they went up. So I really shouldn't. I can't come out strongly. There really isn't a lot of excuse for it. But at the same time, I don't think anyone at TSN intended for that to go out. I don't think anyone said, ha ha, won't this be funny? Hey, you know what? There's no trades happening. Let's put some spice in the chili. I don't think that for 1 second. Not a chance.
Continuing conversations that make you feel uncomfortable. Congratulations to Sportsnet for winning the World Cup of Hockey rights officially. And apparently not having a right of match with the TSN offer, according to Gary Bettman. Bettman said
Did you ask that question?
No, that was asked, I think, by a Canadian writer with the Globe and Mail.
Okay.
And we heard, did Rogers have a chance to match the offer? And we heard, it was the best Bettman moment. Are the reports in our newspaper true, sir, that the Rogers was given the right to match the offer after TSN made theirs? And then Bettman just goes, nope. That's it.
I have a sort of rough idea of how the original deal went out, the $5.2 billion, but I have zero idea about how this one went down. I haven't heard anything from anybody on this one.
I wrote about it on Puck Daddy, and it was an interesting story on the state side with ESPN getting a deal. Yeah. A lot of us were thinking about NBC and what they were thinking and how they felt about ESPN getting this huge hockey tournament after ESPN has been nothing but terrible to the NHL since they lost the rights in 2005. And it turns out that NBC's got a lot of shit going on around that time, according to Bettman and according to NBC. You know, they got the Ryder Cup, they got Notre Dame football, they got all this, that, and the other thing. So they don't have the scheduling hours to put the World Cup on. So and you know, the NHL took it to ESPN, and ESPN said sure. So the idea that there is bitterness on NBC's part, I guess according to the NHL and NBC, is unfounded. But there's still a part of me that's like, wow, man. This is the enemy. They hop back in bed with the enemy. This was the place that they escaped from and went to NBC. And NBC's whole pitch was, we will treat you better than your ex. And now they're right back into it.
Yeah.
It's like it's like me picking the Sharks this year.
Oh, playoffs are coming. But if they get on a roll, man, you're going to ever be tempted. I don't know the nature. I don't know what the NHL's plans are for television stateside. In Canada, they wanted a gatekeeper deal. I'm not so sure they wanted that in the United States.
What is a gatekeeper deal? What does that mean?
Gatekeeper deal is essentially you have one entity controlling all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's your entry to hockey in Canada is now through the Rogers front door. They wanted that. I don't know what their strategy is for television stateside. I would think, I mean, you follow the NFL football model, they want it more spread out, I guess, but I don't know. I have no idea, honestly. I'm not saying it because I'm like ducking an uncomfortable situation because I'm a Rogers employee. I just really don't know.
They went into that deal with NBC to do the same thing. I guess that's also a gatekeeper deal because they went into it for 10 years exclusively with NBC, and there was a lot of hue and cry about that from people, Alan Walsh being the loudest voice. And he's right. But he's right, though. It's like essentially – you know, the NHL at that point when they signed that deal with NBC was at a point where people wanted hockey. You could have gone to any number of networks and said, we have the hockey that you want, and we'll give you an outdoor game, and we'll give you a percentage of playoff games. And, you know, some network with a young male demographic that may be in a similar situation that OLN and Versus were back in the day, needing a property to fill hours, would have been like, sure. We'll take it for sure. Spike TV, we'll take it for sure. Give us hockey. We'll present hockey our way. But they didn't because they felt a measure of loyalty to NBC giving them the real estate they gave them and giving them all of the platforms they gave them. And so they went into that monolithic 10-year deal. But maybe they went into it knowing that when the time came for the World Cup of Hockey, that would be the thing they spread around. That's a possibility.
Yeah, could be. And that's all done joint with the NHL Players Association, too. Let's not hand the whole thing over to the NHL. Right? This is a joint agreement. This is a joint initiative between the two. And maybe it's a situation where you say to yourself, stateside, you know, the best way to create hockey fans is to spread it out along the networks. Whereas in Canada, this is what we always say about expansion teams in Canada. Find me one new fan you'll make. You won't. There are hockey fans here. That's what they are. You're not making new fans. You're making new fans with the Southern Expansion Plan of the NHL. Absolutely. You're turning a zero into a one. You doing that in Canada? No. You're hockey fans already.
But I agree with everybody who did ask Bettman this question, which is how does this deal affect coverage? Because it's not so much what hockey games you put in the air.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, yeah.
What's on SportsCenter? It's about, you know, are you going to cover this sport on SportsCenter more? Are you going to consider this a partnership? Are you going to occasionally bring up hockey on your Screamfest shows? You know, I don't like Skip Bayless. I think he's a succubus. And I don't like Stephen A. Smith. I think he's a clown. But if succubus and clown want to talk about hockey, there's probably people that would like to hear it. And it would make people think more about it. And wouldn't that be exciting?
We'll see.
I don't know.
I'm
excited at the very least that there's a difference. And again, as I said to many people today who have been talking about the ESPN deal, get me Gary Thorne. Just give me one more run of Gary Thorne. I don't know how old he is. I know he does some baseball stuff. I want to hear Gary. If you can get Gary Thorne and convince JD to leave the Blue Jackets for a couple of weeks and do color, I'll be happy boy. Speaking of JD, vote of confidence, by the way, for Todd Richardson's staff today, he said on a Columbus radio station.
Oh, good. Quick little audit here, apropos of perhaps nothing or perhaps something. Just on the ESPN website, on the front page, exactly nothing about it.
I saw that too.
Okay.
It's a proud day, ladies and gentlemen, for hockey.
All right. Got it.
This is a question from What Me Polo that I think we should address.
Okay.
On the NVSW Reddit real quick. After watching the amazing Silfverberg goal last night, could this tactic be used more in the NHL, a self-hand pass? Players could chip the puck near the crease with players batting the puck onto their stick for a tip or shot. If you're doing a show today, I'd be curious if you guys think this is a dumb idea or not. The self-hand pass.
I think
it's a hard thing
idea.
To pull off.
It's a hard idea.
Yeah, I know, right? It's kind of like
challenge.
One of those freakish things. Yeah, freakish things that happens that I don't think, you know, you need right conditions to repeat it. But yeah. All right, joining us down the line, he is the beat writer for the Florida Panthers for the Miami Herald and had really an interesting night last night at the old barn. He is our good friend George Richards, and he joins us now. Georgie, have you ever seen anything like that before?
I'll tell you what. Covered the Panthers for over a decade, and I've seen some crazy stuff with these guys, and that was just unbelievable. I mean, we asked, you know, earlier in the year we asked, when Luongo got hurt, who would be the emergency backup, and we asked again last time. They're like, ah, don't worry about it, Luongo's fine. Meanwhile, he's at the hospital; he's not even in the building. So, you know, just a crazy night.
Well, okay, so what was your first instinct, though, when goaltender number two went down? What did you think was going to happen? Or did you think, I really don't have a clue who's coming out from behind that curtain now?
I was thinking to myself, well, good thing I asked, because they told me Luongo was fine. It's just a precaution. And, meanwhile, he had left, you know, got dressed and left. Then we were sitting around waiting around. So I actually went over to the team management side of the building and was talking with Peter Lukko and Bill Torrey, and they had no idea what was going on. So, you know, we just stood there, the three of us, watching guys go back and forth. And, you know, then here comes Montoya, and he plays for another 5 minutes, and they stop the game again. And, you know, it was just a nutty situation.
Very nutty. Rob Tallis, did you think that there was a chance he was going to get into that game last night?
I really did, yeah. I mean, you know, when he came out, you know, we didn't know why it took so long for him to get approved by the NHL or whatever, because he has been approved in the past. I mean, the guy played a long time, and, you know, he played professional hockey for a long time, filled in. 2 years ago when they needed someone to back up Scott Clemenson, Jacob Markstrom, Jose Theodore had gotten hurt, and they needed a backup, and Scott Clemenson was going to start the game, but Jacob Markstrom's equipment was delayed. So anyway, Rob Tallis went in, and that's 2 years to the day, coincidentally. So he'd done it before, and when Roberto got hurt earlier this season, they said Rob would be the guy. So, you know, we figured that would be him, but then he's not there, and there's Derek McKenzie getting dressed. And, you know, finally, with about, you know, after about 35, 40 minutes of all this stuff, you know, there's Rob Tallis on the bench. But, yeah, I think he would have done okay. I mean, he skates every day, and he still plays here and there. I think he would have been all right.
You know, as much as this is, you know, awkward for the Florida Panthers, and let's just be blunt, not great for the Florida Panthers, a sidebar to all of this is, how much does this sting the San Antonio Rampage right now? And they're in a playoff battle themselves.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you know, they brought up Dan Ellis, the starter from San Antonio, but they left his backup, Michael Hauser, so he's going to play in Charlotte. The other goalie they brought up was the starter from Cincinnati, a rookie from the University of Denver, Britain. So, you know, it definitely hurts the whole organization, because you usually don't lose two goalies at once. Usually it's, you know, one guy tweaks something and you switch things around. But this is just crazy, losing two goalies in one day.
That's absolutely crazy. Significant loss though for the Cats last night, and so you think about what next steps might be if, in fact, Luongo is hurt. And actually, I should probably ask you before I bury the lead. What's the latest on Lou that you've heard?
Well, we don't know. I mean, we talked to the coach, Gerard Gallant, today, and he's like, oh, I don't think it's serious, but you never know. And, you know, with 18 games left and, you know, the Panthers 2 points out of a playoff spot and, you know, slipping with, you know, Boston having 2 games in hand on them, you can't afford to lose Roberto Luongo for any amount of time, much less a game, 2, 3, whatever it is. But they're hoping it's nothing serious. I know Roberto's out getting looked at again today by specialists, and he came back and played yesterday and played well. But if there's any kind of risk, you know, they're not going to let him play.
I think we're going to ask the same thing. I mean, do you see Dale making a move then?
He may have to. I don't know what's out there. I mean, you know,
James Reimer.
Buffalo's already traded its 2 starters, so you can't go to that well. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think he's, you know, he's not going to do anything right now. He's going to wait and see what the doctors say. But if it looks like Roberto Luongo is going to be out for any stretch of time, yeah, I would think that Dale's going to, you know, try and find somebody that can come in here and play.
The goaltenders is one situation. Bjugstad is the other. What's the update on the world's tallest freestanding centerman?
Yeah, he got hit in the chest with a puck, left the game. They said he just got the wind knocked out of him. I saw him walking around the trainer's room last night. He looked fine. He didn't practice today, but they said that was just because he was sore. They expect him to play tomorrow. So, hopefully for the Panthers, Nick Bjugstad's back in his spot tomorrow.
I saw a bit of discussion today, a raging debate, and I think this debate's going to go on for a while, about Philip Forsberg of the Nashville Predators versus Aaron Ekblad of the Florida Panthers for the Calder Trophy. Make the case, if in fact he would be your guy, make the case for Ekblad.
Well, I think you have to look at where Ekblad's coming from. I mean, this kid's fresh out of junior, 18-year-old kid, didn't have the advantage of, you know, playing professionally in Europe or, you know, playing in the AHL and now making the jump to the NHL. And you also look at the position he plays. I mean, you don't expect 18-year-old defensemen to jump into the NHL and make an impact the way that Aaron Ekblad has. I mean, this kid is the real deal. He's a bona fide NHL defenseman, a top two guy. He's playing, you know, top line minutes with Brian Campbell. And this kid's been phenomenal. I mean, he's been terrific. I mean, I know there are a lot of great options out there for the Calder this year, but Aaron Ekblad is right there in this conversation. He's been terrific. I mean, from the first game in Tampa on opening night, he has just turned it on, and, you know, he's made a few mistakes here and there. I mean, all players do, all young players do, especially. But the one thing I like about Aaron Ekblad is he doesn't let bad things carry over. If he makes a mistake with the puck on his next shift back, he's breaking something up. He doesn't let things linger. He's got a very short memory that way. I think, you know, how he plays with such confidence is just, to his advantage. I mean, the kid believes he's good, and he is good.
Jaromir Jagr gave up a second-round draft pick for him. If they don't make the playoffs, does that mean that there is little to no chance he resigns with the Cats? Jagr and his future, if there is indeed one, George, with the Florida Panthers?
I don't know. I mean, it depends how he likes things here. I mean, I think he likes playing with the young kids. I haven't really talked to him a whole bunch about his future, obviously, because he just got here. I mean, he's you know, living in a hotel and just trying to get things situated. Today was his first practice with the Panthers. I mean, they traded for him last week, and he flies in, and then the first thing he does is he plays back-to-back afternoon games. So he didn't even get a morning skate with his new teammates before he made his debut with the Panthers. Today was their first practice. So I think it's a little premature to be talking about that. I think the Panthers are interested in bringing him back. Sight unseen. They know what he can do, but they've heard so many good things about him as far as dealing with the younger players. They'd like to bring him back. He obviously wants to continue playing. If he feels that this franchise has a good future, which, you know, most people do with all the talent this team has, it looks like a pretty attractive place.
Well, it's very warm and nice, too. I mean, it could be humid. Oh, let's be honest here.
Beautiful.
Enough of you. Last one for me, George.
Later, you know.
All right, thanks. I'm gonna go out and try not to bury my foot in slush. the last question for you is, do you think they bring this home? I mean, I know a lot of this playoff push depends on what the Boston Bruins give you, but I know the Panthers have a few games down the stretch with them. From what you've seen from this team, can they bring this thing home, or does it all hinge on the health of Roberto Luongo?
It all hinges on the health of Roberto Luongo. I mean, he gives them a chance every game he's in. I mean, yesterday they give up 3 goals to the Toronto Maple Leafs. He didn't give up any of those goals. Those are all on, you know, Montoya, who came back and played hurt. So, you know, give him a lot of credit for trying to save this team himself. I mean, you know, he came in and played with basically on one leg. But that said, Roberto Luongo has been the MVP of this team. He's the guy that gives them a chance every night. This is a team that doesn't score a whole lot of goals. And he's been able to carry this team and keep them in contention. If Roberto Luongo is hurt, they're in deep, deep trouble. I don't know how you figure it out if he can't play. Maybe this is just a little tweak thing and he's back Saturday against the Islanders and all is well. But if this is a long-term deal, there isn't a lot of time left in the season. They've only got 18 games and they're going to need Lumi to play a whole mess of them.
Hey, George, last one here. What's life like with the Florida Panthers under Peter Lukko now?
Nothing new. I mean, obviously, you know, he's a guy that knows this business inside and out, both the hockey side and the business side. And that's something that this new ownership group, needs something, somebody with that kind of expertise. And he seems to get along really well with Dale Tallon and the ownership. And like I said, I was hanging out with him last night with Bill Torg, and they seemed like old buddies. So, Peter Lukos fit right in, and he feels like a guy that's been around forever, and it's only been about a week since he's been in town. So, I think they're expecting, him to really come in here and help this organization, not only on the hockey side, but mostly on the business side. I mean, he's going to come in here and help this build, help the building out, help them sell season tickets, sell the ads, and get the business side of this thing going. And that's something they desperately need.
Good stuff. George, enjoy it, sir. Revel in last night's lunacy, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, George.
All right. See you guys. Thanks a bunch.
The great George Richards. Were you tapping just now, by the way? Were you drumming?
No. No, why?
I heard
Did
drumming.
I heard, yeah, I was like blowing my nose a while ago. That caught the attention.
No, it wasn't that. I thought I heard drumming. I thought I heard someone drumming.
I just played some tricky in the background.
So right now, Philip Forsberg, as we speak, has 52 points in 65 games. He's a plus 14.
Hang on a second. Hang on a second. You want to do this quick and put Postal off to tomorrow? Because I got a punt at 45. Did Matty tell you?
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
Okay.
All right, we'll punt Postal tomorrow. That's fine.
All right.
He's got 52 points in 65 games. MacKinnon last year won the Calder with 63-82. Landeskog 2 years, 2012, before the lockout year, won the Calder with 52-82. So he's on pace to get the points necessary to win, but it's going to be a real race, man. Like, Goudreau's only 7 points back. And Ekblad's got 34 points in 64 games. By far I shouldn't say by far. Actually, Klingberg caught him in points.
Right.
He's got 34 and 50. But by far the best young defenseman in the league this year in overall play, I think.
I always defer to position. And to me, that's the hardest position to learn as an 18-year-old. What Ekblad's been able to do with the Florida Panthers blue line is, and I know they protected him early, and, you know, Gerard Glantz used him smartly, but that is so hard to break in. Like, can you, you could probably count on one hand the amount of, like, serious growing pains the Florida Panthers have had with Aaron Ekblad. I'm blown away by the guy. I thought he was going to be good. I didn't think he'd be this good this fast. It's, honestly, it's remarkable. And to me, that's a harder position than any of the three forward positions. I'll take Ekblad as my Calder guy.
Where do you stand on the use of age in these debates?
In what sense? Like grooming in the American Hockey League?
In the sense that he's much younger than some of the other Calder candidates.
Nah, you're ready for the NHL, you're ready for the NHL. I mean, there's so many intangibles that can go into things like that anyhow. Quality of opponent growing up, quality of league, you know, maybe the 1 year the OHL is better than QMJHL, maybe the Western Hockey League is better than NCAA. It's just, when you make the league, you make the league. And I think you have to look at it and say, let's all assume they're going from square one. I think. Mm-hmm. Unless it's like Makarov, he's 32. He played on the KLM line.
Well, obviously, but that's just the most interesting debate for me than age lately has been experience. You know, when there was all the, remember, you know, a lot of these guys, especially the Swedes that come over, mm-hmm. are talked about. You know, oh, they're boys playing with men. They're almost the men's league,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and I remember that was the thing when Hedman came over or was drafted second overall, and. You know, it's tough because I understand that argument, but I guess
I don't
agree
buy
with you
it.
Essentially. I essentially agree with you that, like, if you're in the league, you're in the league. It doesn't matter what your journey there was. It doesn't matter what age you are. It should be based on your performance, what you do for your team. You shouldn't get brownie points for being, you're overcoming your inexperience. Because there's some, like, 18, 19-year-olds who've seen come into this league and be better than, you know, 30-year-olds.
Yep, true. And when you look, talking about the Swedish league example, when you bring up like Swedish hockey players that come in, they have to come in and adapt to a whole new game. Let's not forget too. It is a much, you know, softer game. Some would say a more boring game, that they play in Sweden because the ice is that significantly bigger, which is why you tend to see, as a generalization here, people, a lot of those defensemen specifically struggle early on. Mm-hmm.
Finally, a couple things real quick. Wild card race, Washington and Boston. Boston is, I mean, everybody else is in, right? Boston's the only one that's hanging on by fingernails. By the way, when's the last time you saw a Boston Bruins team with a plus four goal differential?
Look at that. Yeah, well, they have the GF and GA at 165, 161, so we know it's plus four.
The offense.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
You dick, I forgot about that.
Hockey fans are dumb. Let's spell it out for them. Thank you.
Devils right back in it, by the way, with a win last night.
Oh, huge. Oh, man. What's their goal differential? Oh.
Minus 21.
Negative 21.
They've scored 144 goals.
Is that low?
Terrible.
It's the same as Carolina.
Is that low? Is that low? It's 144 more than you and I have scored. That's how low. And then over in the West, the wild card race is just bananas. Winnipeg 76, Minnesota 75, LA 72, San Jose 72. But of course, the real wild card in all of this is the fact that Calgary is at 72, which means both of those Pacific Division boys are trying to overcome the Flames for that final spot. It is looking more and more like it could come down to LA or the Sharkies missing the playoffs.
It really does. And what's your money on? I know what my money's on.
Oh, are you kidding me? Let's see. Two-time Stanley Cup champion that always answers the bell has two games in hand, Drew Doughty versus pie in the face. Let me think here. I know who I put my money on.
Well, selfishly for someone, you know, who wants to work, you know, some pretty cool playoff games, I'm hoping the Calgary and Winnipeg are tucked away nicely. Thank you very much. To say nothing in the Vancouver Canucks.
There you go.
But actually,
real quick. Yeah. Yep. Yes. Real quick, the minute we have left here.
Yeah.
Your final thoughts on L'Affaire de Kessel yesterday.
It's never a good idea when you attack the media, I don't think. I can understand why he did it, but let's not forget, too, things were pretty good for Phil Kessel when this team stretched the Boston Bruins to Game 7. And, moreover, this is the point that Damien actually made on Twitter yesterday. It was a good one. If the media is at fault when they're losing, is the media to blame when they're winning, too? And if so, we expect to see Phil Kessel say, hey, man, really want to help the media for helping us on this 12-game winning streak.
The old Jesus made me fumble joke.
Exactly. Jesus messed me up on that one.
I agree with you, sir. I mean, you know, the media obviously should be able to be praised as well as damned for all their coverage. And obviously, we should all think about Cathal Kelly today and his stirring ode to journalism.
Saw that.
He begs these athletes to stop looking at us like the unwashed masses that are criticizing their every move despite never playing at their level. We're people too. Look into our eyes. We're people too. Come on, can we stop being so incredibly goddamn self-important sometimes and just talk about this as being entertainment? Because come on, man. If you cut me, do I not bleed, Phil Kessel?
You don't need everyone to like you. It's okay. It's okay. Just grow some thick skins. All right.
That said,
trust me. Read my Twitter feed. Not everybody likes me, and I'm okay with that. It's part of the program. It's part of the program. It's okay.
Nobody likes me, but listen, we do have to take some time to praise those that do really good jobs. Cathal Kelly's one of them. And listen, there's a man by the name of Adam Proto that deserves our praise. As he tweeted today, he loses 100 followers, Merrick. Mm-hmm. He gains 100 right back. Why? The courage of his convictions.
I will say this about Adam, and I know you and I differ on this one. Mm-hmm. His heart, I do believe, is in the right place.
Sure.
I've said it before. 100% about Adam. His heart is 100% in the right place.
I completely agree. If the right place is constant self-promotion.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what the great thing about it is? I know I'll always get shit for all of this stuff. You know, all the stuff that I say that I get shit for. I'm talking about myself, you morons. Everything that I see in other people, I see in myself. It's not as if there's a lot of people that think that, like, when I criticize Proto or criticize other people, you know, for you know, being constantly outraged and stuff, that I'm somehow like looking down from them from the mountain. I recognize it. It's me. I see me in other people and see other people in me. Hockey porn. That's the show, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. Going postal, peeps. We will put your emails and messages in the queue, and we'll address them accordingly tomorrow. And thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks to George Richards taking time out of a busy day to talk to us about the Cats. And we will speak on tomorrow. Rangers Red Wings tonight. You guessed it.
Rivalry night.
I gotta put the.
See you, Merrick.
See you tomorrow.
No one can ever besmirch the good name of the Red Wings Rangers rivalry. Why? It was just yesterday I was spinning a tale about that one game when
Zetterberg's back too.
And then there was the other time that I just. Oh, but who could forget that playoff series when that. Well, they both have really nice uniforms. Speaking of uniforms, throwback night. Throwback night for the Coyotes coming up. The Peyote Coyote jersey will be back. That's a very exciting time. Speaking of the Peyote Coyote jersey, Jeremy Roenick interview on Puck Daddy today, courtesy of my podcast and buddies Jay Busby and Kevin Kaduk. And also on Puck Daddy in a scant few minutes will be a multi-part video conversation that I had with Hillary Knight, American Olympian, unfortunate double silver medalist, and a MVP of the CWHL, which is creeping towards its playoff rounds. I believe it starts tonight. I think Hillary said she had to rush back. And
it started today.
It started today? Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, it starts
Boston
today or tonight.
Boston already won 3-0 today.
Oh, so it was a daytime game.
Yeah, there's two games a day. Brianna Decker had a third period hat trick.
As she should. She's American. I'm very proud of her. Yeah, so she played today. That's great. I'm happy that Boston won. I'm not happy that the name of the league is the Canadian Women's League. Anyways, we'll talk tomorrow. Thanks to producer Maddie for all the info. Bye.